Hey, welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. This one can be titled The Time Bill Cosby Called Me in 2011 and I crapped my pants because he was my childhood hero and my wife's childhood hero, and the two of us were here together doing little happy dances that Bill freaking Cosby called to speak about his sponsorship in support of Willie T. Ribbs when Willie became the first African-American driver to qualify for the Indy 500 in 1991. Willie arranged the call. He and Mr. Cosby had maintained their friendship. And I'm telling you, this is a guy whose comedy I've been listening to since I was 5 or 6 years old with my father. As I mentioned on the Dinner with Racers podcast, this guy was just like a second father. His way of seeing the world, his comedic viewpoints, absolutely my own. And so with a bit of time from this 2011 interview to 2016 Bill Cosby, you mention his name back then, most people thought of America's father. You mention his name today, and most people want to take a shower and scrub and wash their hands and try not to get sick. So can't change the fact that at least for when we did speak, this was still my childhood hero. And I can't apologize for the fact that in 2011, you will hear me trying to contain that and act somewhat professional while speaking to the man. He called out of the blue. We had a vague idea when he might be calling, but called out of the blue and wanted to do a bit of background on us. Told him a little bit about my father, my wife, who he was wanting to speak about Willie. He had asked me to essentially hang up, read Langston Hughes' A Dream Deferred, and then call him back. But before doing that, had probed a little bit to see if Hughes' poem might have resonated with my life story or hers. With my wife, it did. She grew up very poor in the projects in Montgomery, Alabama. Fiercely intelligent woman, yet came from zero means, took the one option that was made available, which was enlisting in the Marines, and at 18 shipped off to Paris Island, served her country for 4 years, and from that service was given the ability to go to college, where she earned two bachelor's and one master's degree. So you'll hear Bill mention that in the beginning, so it kind of comes out of nowhere, but just so you know, this came from an unplanned call from Bill, and between crapping ourselves, shared some of our background with him. He then told me to call him back. I did call him back, and so what we pick up on is when I called him back and started recording our interview. You'll also hear that Bill was in charge the whole time. Gave me permission to speak at times, asked if I had any questions, prompted me to ask him a question, maybe more than once. There were some interruptions, whether it's a phone call, grandkids coming in. I've just tried to clean some of that up because there's, 3 minutes of just background noise. He was eating something at one point, so you get these long Bill Cosby pauses. Nonetheless, interesting to listen to him. He's also told me how I should write things at one point, but interesting to listen to Bill about his interaction with IndyCar racing, the Indy 500, Willie T. Ribbs breaking the color barrier, and where his life was at in 2011.
Mr. Pruitt.
Yes, sir.
I'm ready. Now, we're talking feeling. All right. Now, I'm going to say a lot of things which you will throw off the boat when you get ready to write. Understood. Right?
I will use whatever is...
No. We're talking now. Now, philosophically, you're born. You're born, and that's biologically. You're born. If you have no mirror, if you have nothing that will reflect upon you other people's feelings, then you go about whatever it is you learn. I'm getting at a person who, as the environment, so to speak, psychology 101,
yes,
begins to make its impression on you.
Yes.
Positive, negative, and inertially. so that you want to be a race car driver. You love the engine, you love, for whatever your reason is, that's what you want. This is called by people who make speeches at your universities, your dream.
Yes.
Follow your dream. What happens to a dream deferred? I want to be a race car driver. Here come the things that will defer your dream. Langston Hughes says, what happens to it? Does it shrivel? Does it... You understand?
Yeah.
The deferment of that which ought to be, according to being a human being, the things that you want, you will have things in your way, objects, whatever, and you work around these things. You want to become a doctor.
Yes.
So, what's in my way? Well, you have to learn anatomy, physiology, etc., etc. And Latin. Okay. So now, for some people, this becomes something. I really don't want to become a doctor. So what happens to that dream that you had? Thanks to Jews. Your wife wants to become something, so forth and so on. She says, the only way I'm going to get this is to give my life of 4 years, to put my life in a position to be lost. So that I may, if I live, be able to not be what I see before me. My projection.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Okay. She lives through that. And she goes to, she now has money, she has scholarship, she has drive, she is working on her dream. It is not, as far as I know, deferred. She earns 2 undergraduate degrees and a graduate degree. All right? No dream deferred. Except maybe she's doing another dream. Making sense?
Yes.
Okay. When we are challenged with the potential of others causing the dream to be deferred, is that clear?
Yes.
Your father, with a speech impediment, fighting the people who want to defer his dream, while he's also fighting that mental deferment.
Yes.
But he's fighting to keep it from being deferred. Is it clearing up now? This is emotion. Because in the very contradictions of the world, controlled by the people, obviously, we can either let those who contribute hold do you have a question so far?
Yes.
Go ahead.
One of the things I always enjoyed about Willie and drew me to him was his fighter's spirit and the fact that for him, as I saw it externally, although it might not have been popular, and I certainly received a lot of backlash from fans, certain fans and media, for not being quiet and just taking whatever those people wanted to give, he preferred to fight and push, which made some people very uncomfortable, but I always took Willie's actions as someone who refused to have his goals and desires to become a top-line IndyCar driver or sports car driver as being something that was truly out of his hands. Did you see that, feel that, respond to that?
Hold the phone. Hello?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, now here's what I'm enjoying. The change. Because there were people who came before Willie, and you have to give that history.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. They, too, refused to accept the threats or the suggestions or the fact that they were ignored, the silence.
Hmm.
I mean, that's what happened with Willie.
Yes.
People who had opportunities, those who could have stepped in monetarily and didn't. And that silence alone made it clear. So that support was not there. The field never was level for Willie.
For you, is that something you should I assume that you recognize that coming in, or was that something that was further illustrated or deeply illustrated once you agreed to support Willie in pursuit of his dream?
First of all, I went in because I recognized that Willie might as well be out there with a go-kart. And the politeness of all of the people made it appear that they were wishing Willie well. Your writing in your discovery is going to be challenged because it is the truth of human behavior that makes it challenging for a person who doesn't want to write the truth. Also, for someone who doesn't want to write the truth for whatever reasons. It could be that a writer can be very lazy and just say, okay, and throw out a statement as a blanket statement. But contradiction has blowing. Having said that, I'm asking you to understand that while Willie was challenged by the silence, the non-participation, the rejection, the shaded smiles, playing the game, but being dishonest with Willie, dishonest him that one would pretend to really like Willie and wish him well. But in the back room, but also, there were whites and blacks who wanted Willie to have that even playing field. And so we parallel this life of the United States of America and its contradictions. The racist, and then those who don't want to be unpopular, and in a way they blame Willie for showing up and making their life miserable.
Yeah.
But it's also the abolitionist who come forward. But not enough.
The 1991 Indy 500 that I recall, the month of May that I recall, was one where there were portions of people that were extremely happy and supportive of Willie. There were greater number that were willing to glad hand and put on airs, per se, but it was more being politically correct than being genuinely interested and supportive. The piece that I am writing is trying to document what happened, not what people remember in the most general terms, but the accomplishments, the achievements, what Willie's, quote, breaking the barrier, I think is what most people remember, but a lot of what has happened, I think, has been distilled down to being little more than that. Something was broken, an achievement was made there, but...
Can't have that story without the human behavior of Willie and the dream deferred is the same as your father, the same as every black athlete, the same as every black scientist, the same as every person, every female facing the challenges of those who have set themselves in the position to be negative in a contradictory way. So that the others, the fellows who came before Willie, I mean, Willie's a bit as big. You follow? But if it comes to Willie being stopped, how big is the event is not important. So somebody stopped the other drivers. Something turned them around, deferred their dream. So when you say this is not, you know, a happy story, you have to make America pay attention to what it has done and what it is always doing. If you don't bring your history with you, just in three or four paragraphs, to let them know that there were dreams deferred and you named them, comes this fellow. We don't know how many times our other drivers did what they did to survive. And let us really put into my eyes as I'm reading the reality of what that sport is. It is a sport where a person has two hands on the wheel, which can very well become a weapon.
Mm. For me, the part of what I'm doing, which is what you're speaking about as well, is having to illustrate, illustrate the Golden Glory series, for example, which was, you know, the African-American only IndyCar series that ran concurrently with the white only popular IndyCar series per se, or Joey Ray, who was almost the first African-American driver to compete at Indy in the mid-1950s, but that, his dream, was indeed deferred. One of the people that Willie speaks about with great fondness is Mary Holman George, owner of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Mary, after Joey's dream, certainly did not come to fruition. She put him, and this is, again, mid-50s, which was fairly uncommon to what I know, for a white person to do, much less a white woman, Mary putting Joey in one of her midget race cars to drive one of her midgets. So there have been the stumbling blocks, per se, or actually that's the wrong way to put it. The roadblocks were certainly not only in place, but those are all things that I am and will absolutely be documenting, because you know, this is not just...
And don't forget, when you talk about woman...
Yes.
I'm just piling on so you can throw stuff off your boat before you sail. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Hmm.
Tuskegee Airmen. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yeah.
So this wonderful woman, Mary, does what she believes. And I'm sure she took heat.
I am...
Okay, let's move on. It's about this man. And I'm going to have to sign off soon. Because it's about this man. People who accelerate and invent things and become heroes and stories in magazines and books, they become that because they are persistent with the dream.
Yeah.
So, if you're looking at someone and looking at a group and they say, you can't come here, and you wanted to come there, and they say, you can't come here. And you turn around. I guess that our life can be filled with people who, when they came to that point, stopped and did not pursue anymore. And then there are people like Willie who say, excuse me, and they work around it. Always going forward.
Yeah.
And they do this, and when people like Willie do this, oddly, they also teach. Because there are also some people who are dream deferrers, you understand?
Yes.
Who, when they see that the person they're trying, the person whose dreams they're trying to defer, still keeps coming, these people quit also. And so the numbers get smaller. What stopped Willie was the inability to get the money. To get the money to make his car one which would be on an even playing field. And I include everything that functions, the human beings who will work on the car, et cetera, et cetera.
If I could ask, of the assumptions I've made over the years, in speaking with Willie multiple times, speaking with Derek Walker recently as well, both said Mr. Cosby did not, you know, open up the treasures, the treasure trove, and say just reach in and grab all you want. This it was not a big amount of money. It was, we weren't talking,
no,
right? Of what I remember,
that is absolutely correct.
And what I took from that, and please tell me, sir, if I'm headed in the right direction, I took from that, yes, I'm sure if you wanted to, you could have easily solved all of Willie's financial problems and had the best of everything with one signature. I interpreted the reasons for your not doing that on being on a bit of a deeper level in that, yes, you could come in as the savior and do that, but for Willie to succeed, not just on the track and winning trophies, but to succeed in this environment, there had to be a buy-in from the average man, the average sponsor, the average person saying, you know, yes, Bill could be an angel, but if this is going to work, and he really truly does belong here, then you know what? I shouldn't have to do that, and I expect others to step in and treat him like any other skilled racing driver who deserves a sponsorship dollar. Am I barking up the right tree at all here, sir?
No, you're not barking. But the main thing is, Mrs. Cosby and I, Willie, this was a donation. I mean, this race car thing is a business.
Yes.
I am not ready to shut down my business to go into a business, mainly because I'm hoping for that which a Paul Newman would get. And seeing that we put something in and it was up and running, that people in America could see that this is something they wanted to support. And it just was way beyond my knowledge, I knew nothing about it. The only thing I knew was I wrote a check, and then I allowed the people to see Bill Cosby backing Willie T. Ribbs. Okay, so now comes anybody who wants to join. We've got a good group of people ready to run, ready to do. And it just, we just kept getting negatives. Negatives.
Hmm.
And service merchandise was our last hoorah. And I don't know if you know the wonderful story about the owner. The owner of service merchandise put the money up. I did the commercials. And Willie went out to drive. And the hilarious response from this wonderful gentleman, who, by the way, knew where every penny was going. So he knew that he was backing a black man.
Yes.
And after Willie's race, I think it was Riverside, he didn't say it to me, but word came back that I think Willie finished, I don't know what Willie finished. It was in the teens.
Yes.
or the 20s. And he said, look, I don't mind, you know, I'm not a, the only thing I wish Willie would do is there are TV cameras around there, and it's on TV, and I wish Willie would find out where these cameras are and just slow down when he's going to the cameras. so that they would reheat service merchandise.
Oh, Father, no,
yeah.
No.
But Willie will forever, and it's people like you writing about the feelings of this human being, the abolitionists who came to join us, the people who didn't. And you don't have to name names, but, I mean, they were there. People said good things. But Willie's field still wasn't. And I knew nothing about racing. As a matter of fact, if I had said to Willie what I really think, I would have been saying, this is a sport where you can get killed in a second, and I have no idea why you want to do this.
That's there probably wouldn't be much of an argument against that, but
yeah. I was just laughing because I remember Willie saying to me, go on, sit in it, and my behind was too wide. Yeah, you know, I put the leg, I went in sideways. There was no way I could fit in that thing, man. It's just, I started laughing at myself.
Well.
But I was always frightened watching these guys.
Well, I grew up listening to a particular track on an album from,
200 miles an hour.
200 miles an hour, so.
That's right.
But that at least that was the right car to choose to fit one's behind in, though. There's a bit.
Hey, man. And you can see how consistent I am, because when I felt that car, I brought that thing back to the house, and I called that fellow and told him, come get this car. No, indeed, man. That was a wild boar. I'll see you later.
And that was the time I interviewed Bill Cosby. Not quite sure if I'm ever going to interview him again, or if I'd have a reason to interview him again, but wow, it was the highlight of my somewhat young professional career back in 2011, So, again, it is what it is. Highly conflicted. I'd be lying if I told you otherwise. Before the scandal broke, before he became known as the rapiest man in America, my wife and I, at least once a year, maybe even twice a year, we'd just have these aha moments where we'd look at each other and say, oh my God, we sat and spoke with Bill Cosby. So, not to beat a dead horse here, but as others have said, those who also grew up loving and worshiping the man, it's been an interesting journey to have to carve that out. And for me, you know, that's carving 38, 39 years worth of Cosby Foundation for my life and putting that away. So, thanks for listening in. Check out more podcasts and other content at MarshallPruitt.com.